from Milieu Media Group, in association with Project Curate. This is The Relay, a podcast exploring what it means to build transformational, justice-driven communities and relationships today, with your hosts, Luke Brawner, and me, Sekonda Joseph.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Excited about like just sharing with folks this next dope combo.
Yeah, we've got a couple weeks now that we're going to spend talking about or listening to a roundtable that you all did about Afrofuturism.
Yeah.
Which I'm actually really excited about. So, you know, I was familiar with the term Afrofuturism. It's kind of a buzzword right now in culture, but I don't think it really clicked for me until this conversation. In fact, when we recorded this, I had just released an episode on another show that I produce about Afrofuturism.
Yeah.
And I thought I got it, but this conversation was really, really helpful for me.
Yeah, I think for most people, like, you think, okay, this is another thing.
Yeah, just
right?
A new genre.
Just
it's
a
like,
new
okay,
genre,
it's,
right?
Yeah.
But it's so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so much more. I really think that it gives folks the opportunity to practice their muscle as it relates to like expanding their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but I don't want to go into too much of what folks talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's
talk about who's at the table. So we brought in some folks who are really familiar with Afrofuturism. Who were they?
You have Jason Oliver,
mm-hmm.
Man, he does so many things. He is an education advocate, as well as, you know, I wouldn't call him a teacher, like a classroom teacher,
mm-hmm.
but he does teach children, advocates for children on all sorts of boards. And he's really a, like, culture consumer, black culture. I don't even know how to explain it. Like, he's all dipping and dapping in like everything that happens. I would love to just say Houston, but I would say and the beyond, right? Because this brother be all over the planet. However, as it relates to Afrofuturism and like science fiction, like he has a book club that's mm-hmm. dedicated to Afrofuturism. And like for me, I was like, dang, is it that deep? And he introduces all sorts of, so not just, I say it's a book club, but they don't just read like books or novels. They also like listen to film and short stories
mm-hmm.
and just really dedicated to expanding interests, I think, or just getting more people to talk about and to explore these different stories that's related to Afrofuturism. So that's Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we have Deanna Daniels, who mm-hmm. is a PhD student at Rice University. Deanna is so dope, and like a lot of the ways that she explores and does research, you know, connected to Afrofuturism, as well as she looks at the way that it like expands community
mm-hmm.
and builds community, and just researching and exploring and sharing with folks her findings on like just how dope it is.
Mm-hmm. And then the always brilliant Dr. Jessica
Davenport.
How could
I forget, for real, Dr. Jessica Davenport, y'all. She,
content producer for
right?
this show, brilliant mind.
Brilliant mind who, you know, just gets all this together. Like she studies art in a way and language in a way that I think, how can I explain it? I don't know. Just in a way that makes it very real and practical,
mm-hmm.
I think, to many folks or whatever. And she brought these folks together and just shares her opinion on like her experience with Afrofuturism.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump into the conversation then. Here is our roundtable on the Black future.
First, like, what is Afrofuturism?
I guess the better question is, what isn't it?
Okay.
Because now it seems to be so layered upon layered upon layered, and things seem to be intersecting in and out. So it's a little bit of everything. I think of it as a literary and aesthetic choice, where in which it centers Black identity and imagines not only possible futures, but alternate realities, and even considers the history, right, in order to think about how Black people will be and engage with the future, right? And I think that's the simplest way I can break it down, because could go a lot of ways. But yeah, so that's how I would define it if I were to
What is it to you, Jessica?
You know, I'm really not. I'm really leaning on Jason and Deanna.
Okay.
With the definition of it. I mean, I my sense of it is just a real concern with thinking about Black life beyond certain structures that are in place, and certainly thinking about Black folks being in the future for sure. But what I've really sort of attached to is this idea of alternative structures, alternative ways of being that are beyond the typical ones that we see or that are socially accepted.
Yeah, I think a combination of both of those, just new ways of living and being both present and in the future, I think are really important for all of us.
So there was a billboard placed somewhere in the U.S. of A that said that Black folks are in the future. Black folks are in the future. Do you think that the I'm tripping. Okay, do you think that the term like addresses, is there something else that says that Black people are not in the future? Like, what's the need for that particular statement?
Yeah, not just for me. So many of our depictions of like contemporary culture and even the future, like fantasy and science fiction, because of some of the casting choices, right? Like we just had the Emmys last night, and so I think it was the Emmys.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't really pay attention. Yeah, that was the
Emmys. Yeah, I was like, I don't really be paying attention to it. But we just had the Emmys last night, and so there's always this talk about representation, and because of that, you look at shows like Game of Thrones, and you look at shows like Star Trek that are imagining the future, mm-hmm. and those like narratives aren't really, especially these big budget science fiction and speculative fiction things, we're not given a lot of leeway and a lot of power over those budgets, right? And so mm-hmm. even if we're included, our narratives and our like ways of being are not typically driving the story, okay. if that makes sense. So it's not just a conversation about our existence in the future, because although that is important, right? Because if you look at certain shows, it's like, well, all right, there are going to be less Black people, like based on what we see in Star Trek, there's going to be less of us than there are, yeah. you know, than there are now. That's kind of wild. Like what happened, right? Like what happened to wipe out all the Black people
yeah.
so that we're not in, I don't know, I'm trying to think of it. Well, I guess Game of Thrones or something, but that's not the future. But I'm just thinking about like fantasy as well. I don't draw. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Like I don't draw a hard line between science fiction and fantasy. It's a really like hard delineation to make. But yeah.
You made me think of, so I am addicted to The Handmaid's Tale. Right? I love the show. Sometimes it really pisses me off as well. I have some critiques about the show, and still throughout the critiques I was like excited about like the artist who wrote it is writing another book about The Handmaid's Tale. So I'm reading the reviews or the whatever you want to call it about the book. And one of the comments was that, so Black people, you know, we don't hear a lot about like African Americans or minorities in the new book. And they were like, well, they were killed off. And I was like, how the hell? You know, how do I rectify this, right? I'm investing my time, my energy in this great work, this beautiful piece of work that has been, like, used as a way to talk about, like, women's rights, right, and what we should fear and how we should come together, right? And at the same time, it's like, okay, there are no Black folks in the future in this work, right? So just the hearing for me of just the term itself, you know, Afrofuturism, hearing Black folks are in the future, hearing there's a thing called the Black speculative arts movement, like that for me is hope and encouragement. Can you tell us the difference between like Afrofuturism, the Black speculative arts movement, and what that has to do with pop culture?
A rallying cry, right? And I think that
what statement?
The billboard. Important, especially when you read *Handmaid's Tale*, because I think killing everybody off—that's an easy answer. And what we know about Black bodies and how they survive—that I can't even be comfortable with just say, "Oh, they killed them off, right? They sent them to the colonies, and everything was fine, right?" That's not good enough for me, and it's not—I don't even think it's good enough for Margaret Atwood, right? I think that there's more stories, there's more survival to be told, and so that's what Afrofuturism comes in, and then you get myths and histories where Black folks are being killed off, right? The transatlantic slave trade. But then you get Drexia like, oh shit, let's hold off. It's not just, you know, we're not just going to say that they died. Actually, you know, the unborn children developed underwater breathing capabilities and created their own empire under the water, right? And that's what Afrofuturism does. It helps you think through these alternate possibilities, think through these different modes of survival. So for me, seeing that billboard was a rallying cry more so than a statement of fact. Because what we know is that Black folks continue to survive, right? And so no matter what situation we've been in, no matter what alien abduction happens, no matter what continues to happen, survival is possible. So for me, saying, oh, Black folks will be in the future, of course we will. But how will we be in the future? And I think that's why those statements matter. But the difference for me between Black speculative arts and Afrofuturism is a very thin line, kind of like historical fantasy and speculative fiction. It's a really thin line, but I think it's really about the goals and the methods. More so it is about the material or the data. So I think Black speculative arts is about art primarily, whereas Afrofuturism, like I said, tends to take everything on. So you get literary, you get art, you get music. You get all different kind of means and modes in which you're doing it. So I think that's more like the theoretical practice of it, more so than like what it's doing. And I think Black speculative arts is what it's doing.
Somebody and then put your name on it. And then you mentioned specifically the Black speculative arts movement, which is an organization. And so I would make a distinction similar to how we have like Black Lives Matter, the hashtag versus the Black Lives Matter global network versus like the Movement for Black Lives. All these things are related, but the work looks different, right? Like the hashtag is not a formal organization, whereas these formal organizations operate differently. And so Afrofuturism being like a label or a genre that different people might classify in different ways, the Black speculative arts movement is like a collective and a community that has been formed within or in cooperation or in alignment with that like Afrofuturism genre. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
I'm wondering, I have a question, Sukhanda, if you don't mind me asking. I wonder to what extent would you all say, we've been working with a book, with Emergent Strategy, Adrienne Marie Brown's book. And I think the last time we talked about it, Sukhanda made a really good point and pulled a quote from Adrienne Marie Brown's work, which said, essentially, and I might be jacking this up, so correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, all activist movement, all social justice movement is speculative work, right? So yeah. I'm wondering if you all can speak a bit to that and kind of make those connections. And I ask that because when we think about this billboard, right, that was put up, that Black folks are in the future, in many ways, and this was an artist who was in Pittsburgh that put this billboard up, and in many ways she was responding to the gentrification that was happening within this Pittsburgh neighborhood, right? So sure, you know, it is absolutely a rallying cry, but it's also sort of a pushback and a statement that speaks back to city planning that happens that doesn't imagine Black people in the future, right? So I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit more to this idea of social justice work, any kind of movement in that regard, specifically around Black life, is constituted already as is a speculative work. Either one of you.
So the first thing that I love that quote from A.J. Marie Brown, that like all organizing is science fiction. And I think, well, that's really important and drives a lot of like A.J. Marie Brown's work. And so you see emergent strategy, and she even did with, I think, Walida E. Marisha, a series of short stories.
Octavia's Brood.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Octavia's Brood. And so you see, she sees these things as like very closely connected. But something that comes to mind is just this past Saturday, we had the climate strike. So it was a global climate strike that was taking place around the world. But in Houston, we had our strike at City Hall. And so you have people coming and like talking about what does like the future look like? Because on the path that we're going right now, like humanity's not going to survive. Mm-hmm. The earth will be fine. Like the earth will be here, mm-hmm. but like we won't, at least not in the way that we exist now. And like communities of color and Black communities especially, like, will be harmed first. We're the people who like live in these areas with air like pollution violations, and you know, we've got more asthma, we've got all these like health issues that we're dealing with internally, even though we might look great, right? But like internally, a lot of this stuff is messing with our water, with our air, like with the stuff that we need to live and breathe. And so there's a friend of mine who is doing policy work for the Green New Deal, Rihanna Gunn-Wright. She's amazing. But so if you look up New Consensus, one of the things that she's talking about is there's all this pushback about how the Green New Deal is too radical, like it's too aspirational. We can't mix these like climate justice issues with these like social issues of housing and healthcare and so on. Like it's too much. We need to just try to focus on the climate first and then do the other stuff later. And one thing that she was saying was, one, if we don't address these like social issues at the same time, then they're never going to get addressed, because that's just how our policy always works. And two, she was like, all policy is aspirational. Literally everything until it gets passed is aspirational. So why would we shoot ourselves in the foot at the beginning by turning it into something that we know won't solve the problems that we have? So even I think with like the Green New Deal and climate change, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did a video with The Intercept, like a short video imagining in 30 years, I think it's like 30 years later or something, 20 years or 30 years, it's looking at the world after the Green New Deal passes. And so it's talking about, you know, so she's looking back on her time as a congresswoman and some of the things that like they were struggling to get passed. And now she's riding on a high speed train, like across the country or something, and mentioning like we lost Florida and just talking about what happened between now and then, right? Like trying to engage people's imagination around what a world looks like after the Green New Deal, because we want to be proactive. We're going to deal with climate change regardless. Like stuff is going to happen. We're either going to deal with it proactively and start trying to like lower these carbon emissions, or we're going to deal with it retroactively, where we just had Imelda, right? Like literally less than a week ago. So we'll be dealing with all this flooding and stuff, whether we like it or not. So I think that's a really good example of like how people are engaging folks' imagination around what does it look like, and what does it look like for like Black folks and other people of color in particular. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what does it look like is really important. And so when you're in a situation and you want to be out of this situation, and you say, how do I get to not be in this situation? And you automatically start imagining yourself somewhere else. You imagine yourself doing something else. You're imagining what it's like to be in a place where the things that's happening to you now are not happening. And I think that's why that quote is so important, because it's all about imagination, right? And so I love the shirts and the quotes that says that I am my ancestor's wildest dream, right? That's an imaginative moment where you're saying that even in that moment, they were imagining what the possibilities in the future could be like for me, right? And so as we do activist work, as we do all this work, it's always thinking through what does it look like? Because we're not there now. This isn't the world we're in now. This is not what we inhabit. So we're always thinking through, like, okay, so how can I get to the next space? So I think that's why Adrienne Marie Brown's quote is so powerful, because we all engage in speculative work. So I think all of Black literature, all Black creativity is always speculative. And that's why it's so important to study and really mine what the possibilities are.
So would you say that, like, just like absorbing these like ideas and placing yourself around this work, would you say that that expands our imagination, or it helps us to push somewhere that maybe we wouldn't without engaging in Afrofuturism?
It should. If it's not, then we're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if we're doing especially social justice work and just trying to keep things the same, then what's the point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are some books or music or some artwork that like created something in you, right? In each one of you that kind of you believe that kind of pushed your ideas to the next level or made you feel like this is it, you know? Or is that not even what we should be looking for?
No, I think that's an important question. I think that's where you should start. For me, especially getting into this work, I read How It Feels to Be a Colored Me. And Zora, she's sitting in this...
Who's that?
Zora Neale Hurston. Okay. Sorry, Zora Neale Hurston. And she's sitting in this jazz club, and she's next to this white man, and she's listening to this music, and the white man isn't getting it the way that she needs him to get it. And so as she's looking at him, she imagines herself, right? Imagination. She imagines herself, like, somewhere else in a jungle. She's angry, but she's able to funnel this anger, and she has a spear, and she's ready to attack. And as she describes this moment, then she gets back to the jazz music, and she says it's the jazz music that prompts her, that sends her to this different space. And so from there, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so as I was reading this, I was also in a Harlem Renaissance course. I was also looking at paintings by Aaron Douglas. And so all of these things kind of came together. And then I started saying, well, this is prototypical Afrofuturism, right? And so I'm also reading The Comet by W.B. Du Bois. And these works, which aren't typically what you would say when you hear Afrofuturism, for me, that's why I started looking other places for Afrofuturism. Because, of course, if it's speculative fiction, you can say, hey, that's Afrofuturism. That's Afrofuturism. But what are the other works? What are the other speculative fiction where folks are just imagining really great and grand things? And technology and all that.
Can you break down, because I know we said this word a few times, but can you kind of break down what is speculative fiction?
Sure. For me, speculative fiction is any fiction that speculates alternate possibilities or things that have not happened yet. So for me, it's any type of horror, fantasy, historical realism, but it's also like... It's Zone One by Colson Whitehead, which is, of course, a pandemic and zombies, et cetera. But then it's also Underground, where he reimagines what happened if the Underground Railroad was actually an Underground Railroad, right? And it's also Nickel Boys, where it's telling...
Where she says actually an Underground Railroad, like it's literally a railroad. Like there's literally like a line of rail, like a rail line underground, as opposed to,
you know, so it's not metaphorical, it's like an actual underground railroad, right? Yeah, and so that's, I don't want to give away the book, but then it's also his new book, Nickel Boys, where in which he's taking a specific historical moment and imagining what the possibilities for these two boys are, right? So all of these works for me are Afrofuturism, and they're dealing with, and they're speculative, right? So they're dealing with speculations around what are possible, what was possible, and what could these things change if you imagine it a little bit differently. So that's how I break down speculative fiction. I'm sure you have a different one.
No, that's it for speculative fiction, right? Like, and I think that that kind of root word of speculate, right, is really important. Just trying to think about, again, always this question of how are we thinking about new things, right? Like, so fiction that we're speculating about, like, what are these new things that we're imagining?
So this is helpful, I think, for me, because I think I've always Yeah, I've just assumed that when I thought science fiction or even speculative fiction, that it had to do with, you know, aliens and zombies and...
Oh, it does.
Right. Like all of those things. Right? Really good stuff. But I think for me, I felt like it only had to do with those things, right? Mm. Like I couldn't really expand it to think about, I don't know, for instance, so some of the stuff that you all are saying, I'm reading a book now, what you were saying about the Nickel Boys, Deanna, had me to think about this book that I'm reading, Sadia Hartman's Wayward Lives. Mm-hmm. Right, where she goes back and does this incredible historical work around young Black women who were migrating to the North during the early 20th century. And there's not a whole lot, or at least there hasn't been a whole lot written about them. And she goes back to the archive and basically just... Right, does this kind of historical work on them, but also has to speculate about what their lives must have been like, right? And not in the sense of... Or at least not from a place of, which is typically how history remembers them, that they needed some kind of reform, that they needed to be shown how to be respectable, right? That they needed to be, you know, shown how to be proper women, but that many of them had all of these other types of, you know, they had queer lives, they had these incredible sexual lives that they were living into and enjoying and found a lot of life in. And she's all speculating about all of this, right? But it's based off of bits and pieces that she finds in the archive or other things that people have been, other people have written. And what it suggests is that, you know, these ideas about what is speculative fiction, what is science fiction, that those boundaries are really expansive, a lot more expansive than I even imagined them to be, I think.
I like them to be that expansive, and some other folk might not agree. Mm-hmm. However, for me, it needs to be that expansive, right? Because counter history is really important. So if you think of John Jennings and Kenitra Brooks' term, Sankofuration, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're taking what's in the behind you, taking from the past and imagining the future, you need that, right? Even just to understand the present that we're in, right? And so if we have complex lives, we have to already know, not even imagine, we need to know that there are complex lives from those from the past, right? And so as we, you know, study the archives and do this kind of work, that's the goal. And speculative fiction helps you get there without, you know, without ruining the history, without messing up the archive, without telling a story that might not necessarily be 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. I think speculative fiction helps you say, okay, so even if it's not, that still works. Mm-hmm. You can still figure something out. You can still find something. And that's why I think speculative fiction is so great and so cool. And now Afrofuturism does need something, right? And so I do have to say that it is about technology, but technology for who and what time period, right? And so jazz at the time of Zora Neale Hurston was her technological advancement, right? And it was doing such cool things with music that they knew, right? And so for that moment, when she was imagining and hearing this music, that was her Afrofuturist moment. Same thing with The Comet in W.B. Du Bois, right? So it depends on which time period. And you could keep going back and saying, okay, so this is for that, right? The Lupola Retreat for Harriet Jacobs is her Afrofuturist moment. And that's how I like to read it, because this is all the work that I'm engage with and invested in and studying. And so I think everybody has that moment. Yeah.
I think one of the things that's really interesting to me about Afrofuturism and the work is how much is connected to the past. Mm-hmm. And it's like it almost wipes out, because for me, when Black folks came to the United States, especially, I think in particular, in most places, unless you're part of the Gullah community or, you know, some other places around the U.S., like a lot of the things that you came here with, your language, the way of dressing, you know, even hairstyles to some point, a lot of things were not kind of like wiped out, and you had to survive. There was a need to like conform. I mean, literally, you were enslaved, so you had to, you know. But when I see whether it's like a piece of art or sometime whether it's a something written, like people who are about Afrofuturism, it's like they make sure that they connect it with the past and take it to the future. It's like very holistic. Mm-hmm. Whether they're talking about, even when I think about Octavia Butler's book, what was it? Not the Kindred.
Parable of the Sower.
What's the first one?
What's the first one?
Wild Seed, maybe?
Wild Seed.
Mm. No. I don't know the first one. Okay, the first one I read. Which is,
what's
which
it about?
Is the Talents of the Parable.
Oh, Parable, okay. Of, the
Parable of the Talents. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. And but I just thought about how often she talked about indigenous medicines and what people did like in the past and how that gave them how they survive through like just holding back. And there is an artist that I love. Her name is Jessie Jumanji. Her work is beautiful. And oftentimes she's taking from like, sometimes it's photos, but it's of indigenous people from all across like the continent of Africa. And she'll place them on like Jupiter or on like, and it's just, I don't know. For me, it is just, first of all, it's amazing. It's beautiful. And it's a great way to like just capture who we are, what we came from, you know, and just give dignity to that at the same time as like pressing our imagination like forward. Almost like we can go in with what we had and still create something different. We don't have to strip ourselves. Because I think a lot of times because of the way we were brought to this country, like we're taught oftentimes like to go further in the future. You want your education, you got to leave your neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. You want to move forward, you got to leave these clothes and this hairstyle mm-hmm. And on, but it's like it gives you permission to like hold on and move forward.
I also was wondering about within Afrofuturism, if y'all can speak a little bit to this question, this piece around just invention, right, and innovation being a big part of Afrofuturism. It occurs to me that often when we think about Black life and when Black life is talked about, it's often the case that it's about kind of what is happening to Black lives, right? Like there are certain things that are engineered for us, and we are not the ones doing the engineering. We are not the ones doing the inventing.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about just this idea around invention and Black folks inventing, right? And that being a part of this.
I think about this all the time. Yeah, I think about this all the time because I think about we're constantly creating so many things in how the world works are not designed for us, are not designed for our success, are not designed for us to thrive, right? And so us building, if you look at, I was just talking to somebody earlier today about Reconstruction, so immediately after the Civil War. We have public schools in the South because recently emancipated Black folks were like, we need free public education. Mm-hmm. That's why we mm-hmm. have public education yeah. in the South. Like we did that, right? And so there was a scholar, Martha Jones, who was at the Houston Museum of African American Culture on Saturday, and she was talking about her most recent book, Birthright Citizens. And so even in the early 1800s, you had Black men mostly who are part of this push to classify like what were the citizenship rights for emancipated and just free Black people living in the United States, because that wasn't there was not originally anything about like Black people in the Constitution, right? It was just, you know, people. Yeah, there was originally nothing like saying that we didn't have the same rights as long as if we were free as like our white counterparts. So it was this like real imagining of what does it look like once, what does it look like for the people who are free, and then what does it look like once everybody gets free?
Yeah.
And so I think there's always just been a lot of creativity. Like our community, we create whole economies, right? So you got folks doing hair, and like my grandmother would sell cakes. Like she was known for selling desserts in Arkansas. And so that's just always been, I think, a part of our lives. Like we have to create these structures because nobody else is going to create them for us. And I think that's a big part of why so much of Black culture is ingrained in American and like drives American culture, which then drives a lot of like global culture, Which is also, I think, something worth discussing within Afrofuturism, how like Black American identity can overshadow some, you know, some other parts of the diaspora. But even in looking at history, I was talking about Martha Jones's work, but I think about Alondra Nelson because she wrote about the Black Panther Party and how they were thinking about healthcare, and there's all this talk about how like Black folks don't like doctors, and there are a lot of reasons for Black folks not to not to have or to be wary around like doctors, and but that doesn't mean that we weren't trying to take charge of our own health. And
that's
so
right.
Shortly after the Black Panther Party started, they were creating clinics. Like, to be an active chapter, you had to have a functioning clinic. They were doing sickle cell drive, like right after the like rapid sickle cell testing was out. The Black Panther Party was doing these like 2,000 sickle cell tests for, you know, at these community. It might have been, actually, it was probably a lot more than that. But we adopt these things even when they're not made, you know, even when they're not made for us. Now we might be actively excluded from a lot of stuff. Investment in the startup community and so on. You got a lot of people trying to do things out of their own pocket. But yeah, we're always creating.
And that was Alondra Nelson's work, you said. That was
about the Black Panther Party. Yep. Okay.
Wow. You mentioned something about the way sometimes like Black American culture can supersede or kind of...
I said overshadow.
Yeah, a culture of Black folks from the diaspora. And so Afrofuturism, in terms of thinking about that, it's not a Black American thing.
So
the term, right? But not necessarily.
It doesn't have to be. But I think a lot of what we see that's like put into and a lot of what's discussed within the genre of Afrofuturism, at least in a lot of pop culture, is Black American, right? So we've got, where is the African analog to Black Panther? Because Black Panther is very much a Black American, you know, construct. Like, where is the Africa's got 54 countries. I mean, 54 countries.
Yeah.
Where's the, you know.
what I was thinking about was that, so like, and I think I read it somewhere. Don't ask me where. But so this idea, the way that folks from the diaspora have generally, even the way they storytell, right, and paint pictures and movies, it's like there's always been this sense of like mysticism and futurism that's kind of connected, right? For me, that's like our holistic idea of Afrofuturism or whatever it is, right? It is connected to our... because we're from the diaspora, whatever, right? But the way that stories are told from folks from the diaspora, in many ways, like if you would go back and read, and I'm speculating, if you would go back and read some stories that were written before the term Afrofuturism was coined, like you would see that everywhere. From authors,
I mean,
who were in same thing with
W.E.B. Du Bois. Deanna brought that up earlier, right? The Comet, written in the like at the like 1903 or 1906. So a perfect example, like a zombie, kind of a zombie story. I mean, I guess it's just a epidemic.
It's a plague epidemic, which makes non-being
because everybody's dead. It's gone. Everybody's just dead. Sorry.
Moved on. It's getting there, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's just what it is. And so the term wasn't coined until the 90s by Mark Derry. But folks were doing this kind of work already. And that's why it's really important to think about like community building and world building around even just the term Afrofuturism and who gets to say I'm an Afrofuturist or I engage in Afrofuturist work, right?
Right.
It was still about building community, people that are interested in what would be typically considered nerd culture or interested in technology. Alondra Nelson is one of them, interested in medical things, but thinking about it differently, right? They want to find community and, you know, you get online listservs and that's Afrofuturism, right? So when you track it through the work, folks are painting this way and thinking through this kind of stuff way, 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 way back there, right? And so now as we are looking back, we're saying, oh, okay, so we can claim this as Afrofuturism. And that's kind of why I say sometimes what isn't Afrofuturism is because of this, right? Mm-hmm. But it is a diasporic part, right? So a big part of Afrofuturism is the Afro part. And it's Afrocentricity. It's thinking back to African spiritualism. It's thinking about African community building. It's thinking about to the practices which we hold dear, which some have been stripped, but some of it's not been stripped. But it's also thinking about past the trauma, right? And not situating our creative moment just because of the transatlantic slave trade, right? Because a select few, came, right? So there's still folks progressing, and that's why technological advancement and all of that, a part of the Afrofuturism, is also important, right? So it's both, and it's doing a lot of things at once, which can be confusing. But I think that's what makes it so great with speculation, because you can do multiple things at once, right? And so as much as you might be considered, like for me, I'm interested in the cultural aspects of it and the fiction, but somebody might be interested in the archaeological aspects of it or the architecture aspects of it, right? So each section that you want to do that work, that's why I think it's an aesthetic and a cultural aesthetic at that, is so that no matter where you place amongst the diaspora, you can find place with Afrofuturism.
So for me, probably like a lot of folks, I think Black Panther was probably the on-ramp for me into Afrofuturism. I'd love to know, because we talked about offline that you're a big fan of sort of all sorts of Afrofuturism. I'd love to know when that kind of came on your radar.
So I think for me, there's a few, like a lot of things happening at one time. So there's a few artists that I like. In like learning more about their work, I learned that if you look at Afrofuturism on Wikipedia, there's an artist from Houston, and his name is Angelbert Matoyer, right? Who I had the opportunity to meet a couple of times, but before that, I was just a fan of the work, and I was like, oh, he does Afrofuturism, like that's really dope. And there's another artist that I mentioned in the conversation who I love. Like, I was like, how do you think about the future and still hold on to the past and give it dignity? That's how I began to explore it. And then, you know, I had conversations with people who were like doing this work. There was this conference in Houston about the Black speculative arts movement, and I had the opportunity to talk with folks who were organizing that. But that's not really, it's bigger than that, right? So just like, so the what it inspired, I think, in me, and the reason why I love it so much, it's like, it presents to us an opportunity to build. So it's not just that, oh, look at this artwork, right? If you're in, like for me, if you're always thinking about how do we solve these issues, right? How do we, you know, in systemic racism, how are we not affected by it? Like, what are, you know, tools that we can use? And at the same time, you're having a problem with imagination, right? Like, there, you're at a loss. Like, just looking at the work, pulling from things, like it gives you opportunity to dream in ways, I think, that you're not always like. So if folks watch Black Panther, then they know what I'm talking about, right? You know what that is. It did not, just like in the conversation, like it does not just make you, like it doesn't stop at Black Panther, right? You begin to have other conversations. And that's what Afrofuturism does for me. Like, I think one of the things that I'm frustrated with often, like being a community organizer and being interested in, not just being interested, but really being invested in, so criminal justice, I refuse to call it reform, but transformation. So hearing solutions from people that don't ever solve the problem, because it's like folks are stuck with what they see, right? But then also being engaged with folks who bring things to the table that may sound unimaginable, like let's just end prisons, right? We don't need police. Let's police ourselves. Right. Like those types of ideas, like I believe what Afrofuturism does, and folks who are creating this type of work and who are like talking about this type of work, is the, if you listen to them, and that's to me, that's what's so amazing about Black people, is that there are no boxes, right? Art is never just art. It's life, right? It connects with the other things that are happening in life, right? And if you listen to a lot of folks who are involved in this work, like they're also talking about criminal justice reform. Maybe they're not necessarily activists, right? They're not necessarily doing that type of work. But for example, on this show before, we talked about Adrienne Marie Brown. I'm not sure if one of the things that we did mention is that she intentionally like wrote this book, Octavia's Brew, where she like got four community organizers were activists, right? And was like, hey, I need you to write fiction. Like, I don't do that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't write fiction. I need you to write fiction. And if you listen to the stories of the folks of what happened to them after, right, they had to, like, use their brain to, like, look in this direction and create something that you really couldn't imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, it affected them in their work, right? Possibility, creativity, like endurance, like you actually need that to become solution oriented. So I guess that's why this work interests me, because it gives me the opportunity to increase like that imagination muscle, like that piece. And I honestly believe like the more of us that, you know, play in that space, like we give ourselves time to like create and to imagine. Like I literally have a show called Imagine a World, right? Mm-hmm. Like I 100% believe that the more time we spend with that type of stuff, like the more our solutions will get further away from what we already see, right? And closer to something that really serves us and not just build on top of something that's already a hot mess.
I love that. See, that's the thing that hadn't clicked for me in previous conversations I participated in about Afrofuturism. It hadn't clicked for me that it's not just black science fiction. It actually serves a really vital purpose. Yeah. I love that.
Honestly, Lou, like most of black folks do, it's never just that. Food is never just food, right? It's never just that thing. It's always connected to other things. And I think as Americans, sometimes it's hard to see things that way because we categorize a lot of things, but like black folks at their best with Afrofuturism and with a lot of things, like with gumbo, like we really can.
How often it really serves
a lot of purposes.
We come back to the gumbo a lot.
We're gonna always come back to gumbo with me on the mic.
Yeah. Well, wonderful conversation. I look forward to picking it back up next week with part two. Secunda, as always, it is such a joy to get to do this with you. We'll see you again next week.
Look forward to it.
The Relay is produced, edited, and mixed by me, Luke Bronner. It's co-produced by Dr. Jessica Davenport, and our artwork is by Heather Hale. Check out more of her work at halehouse.co. Learn more about Project Curate at projectcurate.org and The Relay at therelaypodcast.com. For bonus content from this and other Milieu Media Group podcasts, check out the Patreon link in the show notes for this episode.